track 12, and now we come to the feature article. The item this week comes from TNF Soundings. Contributor Liz brings us the story of Robert Louis Stevenson, Scottish novelist and travel writer. He's best known for works such as Treasure Island. He wrote adventure stories that are still read today, but his own life was an adventure.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz from East Kilbride. Now, my choice today will be a name known to you all, Robert Louis Stevenson, the writer of adventure classics like Treasure Island and many other books. But his own life was also an adventure, indeed from Edinburgh all the way to Samoa in the Pacific Ocean. So here we go. Now, just to clarify, and this gets some people confused, there were two very famous Stevenson families. One were the family of locomotive engineers in the north of England. The other one, our family today, were the builders of lighthouses. In fact, his grandfather, also Robert Stevenson, planned or built 23 around the treacherous coasts of the British Isles. Our Robert was an only child. His father was a lighthouse engineer. And growing up, our Robert was a very ill wee boy, long periods of time in bed, many, many disturbed nights. And through these disturbed nights, as well as his mother caring for him, he had a nursemaid, the beloved Cummy, who not only cared for the sick wee boy, but also told him stories. Sometimes these stories were very dramatic, even scary, and gave him nightmares, but he was very fond of her because she did basically care for him in times of great illness. Growing up, the family were concerned. Their wee boy, whom they nicknamed Smout, was so ill he had a very erratic education in his younger years. But yet, he could dictate stories. So the imagination, perhaps prompted by nursemaid Cummy, was there from a young age. The family, of course, expected Robert to follow in the engineering business. And the disturbed education did not stop him from applying and being expected and then accepting a place at University of Edinburgh Engineering Faculty, of course. This was not what our Robert wanted to do. And he became, shall we say, a very, very erratic student. In fact, he was quite a wild student because his father provided an allowance. And sad to say, our Robert spent his allowance in the pubs round the university and also in the brothels around the university, visiting the brothels so often that he had a nickname, Velvet Jacket. The photos of the time show him wearing the infamous jacket, and by this time he's grown a rather bohemian moustache. Will he become a lighthouse engineer? No. He eventually just gets the courage to tell his parents that engineering is not where his path lies. So perhaps law, suggested his mother and father, and he starts the law course. That doesn't really work either. And it becomes clear that our Robert has to tell them the reality. He wants to be a writer. He writes a lovely poem to his parents, saying that he will not be building the lighthouses so famous by other members of his family, but he wants to play at home with paper. In other words, write his poems, his essays, and perhaps the novels. The poor health, dreadful bronchitis all winters, led him to believe that his health and his literary ambitions would both be nurtured by moving to warmer parts of the world, perhaps Bohemian centres in the south of France. So he goes there. He meets people of the same attitude as himself. One such man is an already established writer, a larger-than-life character called William Henley, who sadly had the lower part of his left leg amputated. Some of the biographies of our Robert insist that this William Henley was the inspiration for a certain Long John Silver in a later novel. Meanwhile, our rather shady, very, very sickly young man seems to attract many women. They want to mother him. They want to care for him. And he meets the love of his life. One Fanny Osborne. She's American. She has what we might nowadays call baggage. She has come over to France. She believes she can be a writer. She believes she can be a painter. And she has left behind the ne'er-do-well husband called Sam. She has left him prospecting for gold and living a very, very dissolute life over in California. Can they be together? She has children. A divorce would maybe mean she would lose custody. And although some of the writers describe Fanny Osborne as a coarse coquette, they seem to believe they were made for each other. His parents were aghast. They threatened to cut off the allowance. So Fanny goes back to America with her children. Robert takes long-distance walks on a very reluctant donkey through the south of France. The donkey was called Modestine, by the way, and that was one of his first successful writings, Travels with the Donkey. The love, though, continues. He saves money for 3 years and then gets on a steamer in Glasgow, sails over the Atlantic, arrives on the East Coast, takes an overland train to California to be reunited in Monterey with the beloved Fanny. He was 29, a scrawny, sickly man, according to reports. She was 40, with the children. But they were married in 1880, and they decided then to live the life they wanted to live as best their finances would allow. They wanted to travel. They wanted to have experiences. One such experience was their honeymoon choice. I mean, really, is it wise for a man who had a bad chest to spend his honeymoon in a mining shack? You can decide that for yourself. But money was not yet coming in for his writing. They returned to the UK, where Fanny charmed the Stevenson parents. They were given money. They were given a home that they could live in near Bournemouth for quite a stretch of time, where our Robert met Henry James and also wrote the bulk of the novel that became Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But yet they were restless, and of course they still yet were struggling for money. But they were back to the States, they were living an erratic life, and then he had success with a stage version of Jekyll and Hyde, and then his father passed away, and at that point the money worries were over, and they could indulge the restless spirit because they now had finances. He wrote, he yearned to visit the Parrot Islands of the Pacific. And that's what they did together for the next 3 years, wandering New Zealand, Australia, Tahiti, Hawaii, and settling on Samoa. Was Samoa the idyllic South Sea paradise they had expected? No. Samoa by the 1880s, the 1890s, was a hotbed of local chiefs in prison, intertribal clashes, and the ever-growing interest of large powers in these tiny islands. America wanted control of Samoa. Isn't that topical? Germany wanted control of Samoa. And of course, Britain, the Britain of the Empire, was interested in Samoa as well. At this point, our Robert was writing, an ill man was writing 5 hours a day. And the remaining parts of the day, he was writing letters to the London Times to complain about the British government. He was writing letters to the British government directly. At such a depth and at such anger, he was threatened at one point with being removed from the island. But through this, the Stevensons managed to prosper. They built a house on a estate called Vailima. And through all their struggles, they showed themselves to be people of surpassing kindness to the population of Samoa. In fact, they were described in many ways as being like Highland chieftains of an idyllic past of Brigadoon type unreality. He wanted to be a Cameron of Lochiel. Despite these joys in their home in Samoa, the ill health continued. Oh, by the way, he also had a stepson who just took money, a stepson-in-law who also took money and several mistresses, and Fanny herself was quite an erratic woman, mood swings, large purchases, trips to Australia to spend the money that our Robert was now earning. I would like to tell you that Robert Louis Stevenson triumphed over his ill health, but I can't. By the age of 44, he was a thin, thin, ill man. He took a stroke in 1894 and passed away. There was dreadful sadness among the local people of Samoa upon his death. And in fact, they built an extra road from their estate up to the hillside where his tomb was placed and where it is till this day. Robert Louis Stevenson, the political activist, in fact, had been very aware of the position of these small islands. And 8 years after his death, the islands themselves were partitioned between America and Germany. But to end, I think, on a positive note, although it's a sombre account, Robert Louis Stevenson did find peace in Samoa. And in fact, he wrote the beautiful words that are engraved on his tomb to this day. And I'd like to finish the story of his life with these few lines that he wrote. Under the wide and starry sky, dig the grave and let me lie. Glad did I live and gladly die, and I laid me down with a will. This be the verse you grave for me. Here he lies where he longed to be. Home is the sailor, home from the sea, and the hunter home from the hill. That's my choice, Robert Louis Stevenson.
TNF Soundings.